stop for a minute and take a little history lesson.
Money is like water. It will always find a way.
Money in politics isn't new. There's a long tradition of rich people and corporations using their wealth to influence politics. And before the first campaign laws were put into place, it was common practice for politicians to reward campaign donors with jobs. The Civil Service Reform Act in 1883 outlawed the political patronage system, but by the turn of the century, big money was still playing a big role in the financing of campaigns. Before the 17th Amendment to the Constitution, the one that allowed direct election of senators, wealthy industrialists would routinely bribe state legislators to influence their votes. How bad did it get? Well, back in 1899 in Montana, two rival mining magnates spent over $1 million in bribes to state lawmakers to buy a Senate seat. It was a scandal that kept the seat vacant for 2 years before one of them was eventually seated. Titans of industry like the Rockefellers, Carnegies, and Fricks bankrolled entire campaigns. All right, you still with me? Okay, good. Public outrage led to the Tillman Act of 1907, legislation that prohibited corporations from spending on federal campaigns. Campaign finance reform had momentum, and a few years later, the Federal Corrupt Practices Act of 1910 was signed into law, the first piece of legislation that required disclosure of contributions to political campaigns, and it set dollar limits on some individual contributions. All right, now we fast forward all the way to 1974 when, in the wake of the Watergate scandal, the Federal Election Commission was founded. In 2002, the McCain-Feingold Law banned so-called soft or unregulated money from political parties. The Supreme Court's 2010 Citizens United decision found that preventing corporations from spending money on political advertising was a violation of the First Amendment right to free speech. So Citizens United has seemingly taken us back to square one, that pre-1907 landscape where wealthy interests are free to spend their money and influence on campaigns. But the 2016 presidential election saw pushback to the idea on the left and the right.
The billionaire class is not going to give me a whole lot of money, even if I wanted it, and I don't. I've never taken any corporate PAC money in my life. I don't want their money. I don't believe in their agenda. And I'll stand with working families, and hopefully we'll get enough money to run the kind of campaign that we need to run.
Super PACs are a disaster. They're a scam, not only in dishonesty and what's going on, but also in a lot of bad decisions that are being made for the benefit of lobbyists and special interests.
And as we look ahead to the November midterms, there's some momentum building, at least among Democrats, for an organized effort to turn their collective backs on corporate money.
And I won't take a dime of corporate PAC money.
I've decided from this point on, I am no longer accepting corporate PAC checks into my campaign. And my effort to ban corporate PAC checks is just a first step in that direction.
The response to that of the DNC is to say we want to let corporate lobbyist money back. I mean, it was just tone deaf.
We're done. I'm not doing this anymore because this is f***ed up that thought is even going across our minds right now, that we would vote a certain way based on money coming in or potentially coming in.
In fact, 85 Democratic nominees for Congress have pledged to say no to corporate PAC money.
We know voters really, really respond to these self-sacrificing behaviors that candidates are making.
That's Tiffany Mueller, president of End Citizens United. And her perception is backed up by the data. A recent Pew report found that 75% of the public said there should be limits on the amount of money individuals and organizations can spend on political campaigns.
So they're saying, look, I can't change the whole system, but I can take a step and I can make a change in my campaign. And what I can say is that in my campaign, we're not going to take corporate PAC money. And that way, you know that whatever decision I go to Washington and I'm making is on behalf of you, the worker, and not a corporate special interest who might be trying to buy access to me as a member of Congress.
I asked Tiffany about her organization and why she sees the Citizens United decision as the turning point for this moment in American politics.
So what we know is that in January 2010, the Supreme Court decided the Citizens United decision, which basically took two really terrible ideas and merged them together. It said corporations are people and money equals speech. And it merged those together and put a for sale sign on our democracy and allowed corporations to spend unlimited and undisclosed money. What we've seen since that time is an increase in spending of about 900% by outside spending since just 2010. Everyday Americans really feel this. They feel it in their day-to-day lives. They know that it impacts things from jobs and wages to lowering prescription drug costs to healthcare to tax reform debates to all of those really essential pieces in our lives. So In Citizens United was formed in March of 2015. So we're about 3.5 years old. And our main goal is to really elect champions of campaign finance reform. So people who are going to come to Washington and really fight to change the system. We have over 4 million members across the country. We're completely grassroots funded. Our average donation is just $15. And we're really proud of being a voice for those everyday Americans.
You're asking candidates to take a pledge to not accept corporate money. What does that mean?
What the No Corporate PAC pledge is, and we've seen other folks do other things. So we've seen candidates take no corporate PAC money. Other candidates are taking no lobbyist money. Some candidates are taking no PAC money at all. Some candidates are not taking money from specific industries. What this is a really common sense way to really have a value conversation around whose side am I on? And in 2016, what we saw of the battleground House seats, only about 3 candidates had done this. This cycle, what we've seen is 60% of those same most competitive House seats, 60% of those candidates have taken this No Corporate PAC pledge. And that means that they literally aren't taking any money from a PAC that's directly connected to a corporation, which is how they have to file with the FEC.
What do you think the change was between 2016 and 2018? Was it Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, both of whom said, you know, nobody can buy me, I'm not taking money from special interests?
I think that's part of it. We saw, obviously, we know how powerful this message was for, obviously, we know how powerful this message was for Bernie Sanders during the primary in 2016. But voters have long thought that this was a really important issue. We saw Obama in 2008 say that he wasn't going to take any PAC money or any lobbyist money. And it was incredibly powerful, especially during the primary at that time. But what we know now is that this really cuts across all party lines. We also saw Donald Trump use it during the general election in 2016. He would say, I knew how to give a $5,000 check so that when I needed those members of Congress help, I could just pick up the phone and they would do whatever I need. He basically was saying, they're bought and sold. I know how to buy them. I know how to play the game. And that's how voters believe it really is. So this takes that out of the equation. But when we're talking about a corporate PAC, they are really basing their decisions on who they're going to invest money in. They really try to make sure that they buy access, right? I was a chief of staff on the Hill. I've seen this. I've experienced this. There is an expectation about what kind of access they're going to have if they donate to your campaign.
Can you talk to us a little bit about when you were up there, what that was like?
So if you are having a fundraising event and they came and gave money to that, they often might say, well, let's set up a follow-up meeting. Or even during the course of that event, they would say, hey, I have a great idea for your boss to take a look at. You know, Beto O'Rourke no longer takes any PAC money whatsoever. And he tells a story about why he came to that decision. When he first came to Congress
in 2013, and like just about any other member of Congress, I hired a Washington, D.C. based fundraiser.
He was meeting with, I believe it was actually the sugar beet industry,
some really great farmers. And sure enough, they supported us. They wrote a big check. I think it was $10,000.
And about 6 months later, the farm bill came up.
And there are several amendments, including one amendment that is going to favor this group that I just had lunch with, that just wrote me the $10,000 check. And the recommendation from my staff, the legislative assistant who works for me, who covers farm policy, is, Beto, do not vote for this. It does not make sense. It's not a good use of taxpayer resources. And so I voted against it. I get a call that evening from my DC fundraiser, and she's like, what in the hell are you doing?
And he was told that they were really upset with him because they had donated to his campaign and he had voted against them.
I said, that's it. I'm, you know what, loved working with you, but we're done. I'm not doing this anymore because this is f***ed up that thought is even going across our minds right now, that we would vote a certain way based on money coming in or potentially coming in.
That just kind of constant access and expectation works up there and how it can kind of pretty quickly and easily corrupt the system.
Tiffany, I thought it was interesting that you used the term self-sacrificing because a lot of Democrats that I talk to privately say, wait a minute, why are you disarming unilaterally? Nobody on the other side is saying that they're going to do this. You are taking away a source of funding. You're not Barack Obama. You're not Bernie Sanders. You can't raise the kind of money it takes to run a federal campaign without getting big donor money in there.
Well, what we've seen is actually that this helps basically put on caffeine our small dollar donors and the enthusiasm that we get from voters. And there's really no substitute for the faith and trust that voters have in someone who's taking this step and who is showing that they're really going to be on their side. And I'll give you one example. President Trump traveled to New York 22 to campaign for Representative Claudia Tenney.
And I just want to thank you very much for all you've done. And hopefully we put Claudia right over the top where she belongs. I think she's...
And Anthony Brindisi is running against her, and he has taken the No Corporate PAC pledge. And he definitely doesn't have a national profile. But what he was able to do was turn out 700 small dollar donors and raised $40,000 from that one event with just small dollar donors. And those are people who are then going to go talk to their family and friends and who are going to go knock doors and who are going to make phone calls on his behalf. So you're bringing people into the system at these lower levels of donation. You're also getting them actually involved in their democracy, which is what we should be fighting for.
And is it a sustainable model? I mean, when these candidates go from being insurgent, I'm here to shake up the system, to being part of the system, do their low donors stay engaged? Now they're an incumbent.
What we know is that for the average Democratic incumbent, corporate PAC money is about 15% of their fundraising for their reelection. That is not an insignificant amount of money. It is also not an insurmountable amount of money. And again, what we have seen is that then individual donors become much more engaged. You then build a larger individual donor network, and those folks stay engaged with you. There's no reason to believe that this is just going to crater out.
And so is the goal ultimately for End Citizens United to radically change the way that campaigns are funded?
We have, in just the past 8 years, seen a radical change in the way that campaigns are funded and the way that elections are funded for the worse. So in 2010, there was $143 million of outside spending in elections. And in 2016, there was $1.4 billion of outside spending, 900% increase. And what that's meant for candidates is that they no longer control the message to their voters. We are at a point where we have to radically change the system. We support full and complete disclosure of all spending in elections, but just fully disclosing it isn't going to change the way the systems are funded fundamentally. We know that we need to overturn Citizens United. We also need to overturn some of the other court decisions that led to this flood of unlimited and undisclosed money. We support a public financing option, one where small dollar donors are incentivized instead of just big money. The other thing is that we know that there are 20 common sense pieces of legislation sitting in Congress right now that we could pass tomorrow if we had the right folks in office. And so that's what we're fighting for day in and day out, is to get those right folks in office so that we can at least pass some steps toward a better, more accountable system.
Tiffany Mueller, thank you so much for coming and joining us.
Thank you, Amy.
All right, so there's this growing movement by some Democrats to say no to corporate money. But is this the start of something big and bold that could change the way campaigns get funded? Or is it just a gimmick?
The Obama administration guys from Pod Save America took on this question for their podcast this week.
It is incredibly clear that people are hungry for this, and they see it as a signal that they understand that this is an underappreciated issue for millions and millions of people, and you more than make up for the lack of corporate PAC money with enthusiasm, small dollars, et cetera, et cetera. There's the larger policy question about what it actually means. Ultimately, saying I won't take corporate PAC money is saying I won't be part of what is a fraction of problem we currently have in the way money is influencing politics, from lobbying and super PACs to all the other ways in which money has incredible amounts of leverage inside of our political system. This goes to, I think, the deeper issue around corporate money generally, and the fact that that when we're talking about PAC money, we're talking about a small subset of the ways in which money has influence. Democratic Party is doing this big reassessment of what we stand for, how we fundraise, what does it mean to be electable, what does it mean to be a Democrat.
But as we heard from Sheila Krumholz at the top of the show, there's one truism in politics.
Money follows power.
I talked with Dave Weigel of The Washington Post about how Democrats navigate this terrain.
When Barack Obama was president, as president, he can raise a lot of money. He did so. And he had in certain rules in the DNC that said that we don't take corporate PAC money. Or we don't take corporate money, yes. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the not at all missed chair of the party for 5 years, quietly got rid of that before the 2016 election. And inside the DNC, which is even as Democrats do very well when elections have surging turnout, which is the DNC itself is not making a ton of money, the DNC has kept those somewhat relaxed rules and has had a series of fights over how else to relax them. For example, they passed recently a rule saying we don't take any PAC money from fossil fuel companies. And well, there's much applause. I was there at the vote and everyone seemed to like this. In the months after that, they claim they heard from labor unions in the energy industry that said this was hurting their ability to give to the Democratic Party. And so they've relaxed that rule. So the DNC, I think, stands out here as something that has a ton of risk in terms of how it frames where it gets money from. And the luck for Democratic candidates is that there are lots of small dollar donors out there, lots of liberal organizations as well, that are willing to give lots of money to make up for this. They're just not willing to give it to the DNC because the DNC is associated with this old style of politics.
Mm. So this becomes really, it's the institutions that are more concerned about the fundraising fallout, I guess we can call it, than the individual candidate. So it's that the candidates are trying to move this debate and the institutions are the ones that are saying, whoa, 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 let's hold on a minute.
Yes, that's basically true.
So, Dave, do you think that this becomes something of a flashpoint? Let's say we fast forward past November, Democrats win control of Congress, and you have the institutionalists versus this new class of candidates who now are members of Congress who made this no corporate money pledge. Do we think that this starts something within the Democratic Party that becomes much more substantive in terms of where it goes from here? Or is it one of those things that it gets talked about on the campaign, but once we get it into reality, it becomes much more difficult to know where it goes?
Well, it's hard to predict past the campaign. I think for 2020, I would be very surprised if anyone who becomes a front runner does not take this kind of pledge, no corporate PAC money, immediately. Kirsten Gillibrand, Kamala Harris have done so already. I believe Elizabeth Warren has done so.
I think Cory Booker somebody who's, as well, maybe.
Cory Booker's done it. Then some of these people have been hit in the past for, frankly, legislating on behalf of an industry in their state, like Elizabeth Warren with medical device companies or Cory Booker with pharma. And they're saying we're going to bathe ourselves in the cleansing water of a no corporate PAC donation and reintroduce ourselves that way. I don't know how another candidate would get away from that, the exception being a wealthy candidate, a John Delaney, a Mike Bloomberg, who just says I'm not taking corporate cash in the same way that Trump said for a while that he wasn't. Just, I'm rich, I can fund it myself. That's frankly something that's been helpful to a couple of Democrats in races for governor recently. In this year, J.B. Pritzker, who I think even Republicans think is probably likely to be governor of Illinois after the election, extremely wealthy, the head, runs the Hyatt Hotels chain, is bottomless pit of money that he can spend on this. So it allows him to say stuff I'm not taking a salary if I win. Ned Lamont in Connecticut, same thing. That is a second order problem, I'd say, for Democrats, that the current campaign finance system allows like the cleanest people to be the ones who are rich and can fund their own campaigns.
So, Dave, I know you've been covering politics for a long time, and let's just get to a sort of bigger, more existential question, which is fundamentally, do we think that if Democrats are saying we're not going to take money from X or we're not going to have lobbyists give us money here, that it actually makes any bit of difference in the way that Washington works?
Well, certainly people have found, organizations have found that if it becomes toxic to take their money, then that lasts for a little while and it reduces their influence, at least publicly facing. Again, when it comes to the next Congress, Democrats aren't going to, even if they control both houses, aren't going to actually have a ton of influence on what gets signed into law. So I think it's more teeing up the demands on the next politics for 2021 if there's a Democratic president.
I mean, I think part of the reason that you're seeing so many candidates taking this pledge is this feeling of frustration they have as regular citizens and what they're hearing from voters about, like, the system's broken and there has to be a solution. Is there like a solutions-oriented piece to this no corporate PAC pledge? Or is it simply, well, I'm not going to take money from these certain groups and that's as far as I'm going to go? I'm not here to give you solutions to the problem of how we get money out of politics. What I'm telling you is who I'm not taking money from.
Well, had the election gone a different way, I think the issue would have been oriented very differently. You would have had a President Hillary Clinton appointing probably a fifth vote, where if a campaign finance case came up, you'd unwind some of the campaign finance law that Democrats hate so much. So End Citizens United, that name in 2016, I think it had a lot more oomph behind it than it does now. Now you see Democrats saying we want to amend the Constitution to redefine this. That's difficult. I think not impossible, but very difficult. In the meantime, you know, if you're a Democrat, you have this sense from your base and you're talking to your voters all the time. You're talking to volunteers who've signed up. You have a sense that what rich people and companies are controlling the country and you need to stop being influenced by them. The phrase corporate Democrat, I think, is probably the number one epithet launched at Democrat candidates around the country. So you're listening to your base. You have to avoid that impression. And the clearest way to do that, barring any sort of change to the campaign finance law, change to the Constitution, simplest way is say, well, their money's no good to me. You know, like, take it out. I'm not going to do business with them.
Dave Weigel, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your wisdom with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And we'll give you the last word. Does money in politics change the way you think about your vote?
This is Michelle calling from Honolulu. I really hate those super PACs with a passion. I would love to see big money removed from the ability to run for office. It makes us grassroots folks feel like our votes don't matter. And furthermore, the candidates spend way too much time fundraising instead of getting anything done to either help the country or their constituents.
My name's Steve Olson from Tampa, Florida. I think money in politics rarely comes via altruism. The larger the donors, the more is typically expected in return.
You can always share your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter. We're at The Takeaway. And if you missed anything or want to listen back again, check out our podcast and, you know, leave us a rating while you're there. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Amy Walter. This is The Takeaway.